This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. We're joined now by the fabled economist, Lauren Scott. He's one of the 32-member National Business Economic Issues Council. He's a part of that group, meeting quarterly to discuss issues of national and international and state interest. And, of course, for many years, he taught at Louisiana State University from 1969 to 1998, rising through the ranks from assistant professor to holder of the Freeport Mac Moran Endowed Chair of Economics. He led the department from 1983 to 1996, and the ranking for the LSU department rose from 101 to 38th nationally in that time. He is with us to talk about what's going on in our world from the economic standpoint. And Dr. Scott, what about tariffs, the Trump tariffs? How are they affecting our state?
Well, it's. I don't think the tariffs are good for anybody right now, unless you're one of the protected industries like steel or aluminum. Then I think you're better off. Virtually all economists agree that the best plan of action, the best growth you're going to get, is when you have free and open trade between countries. So this has not been good for our state. It's not been good for the national economy either. I think when you look at the numbers that will start coming out, I think, this year in terms of growth and real gross domestic product, I think you'll see those numbers start to decline unless there is some major breakthrough in the discussions with China. If there are major breakthroughs with them, then I think we'll return to really good growth. But right now, I think most economists are forecasting a pretty significant slowdown in growth. No recession immediately, but if this drags on very much longer, 2020 could be pretty ugly.
Well, it's gone on for a little while now. What impact has it had to this point?
Well, I think the big question is, what is he trying to do? And, you know, who knows with President Trump? I mean, the two options are that, number one, he's just trying to protect domestic industries from foreign competition. And if that really is what his game plan is, then we're in for a very rough ride. Especially, again, starting with slowdowns this year and probably a serious recession next year. But if he's really just trying to bring people to the table, especially the Chinese that are engaging in very unfair trade practices, especially with regard to our intellectual property, if he's really trying to get that fixed, then then we could come out on the other side of this much better and with even better growth. So the next year or so is going to tell, the next year, I think, is going to tell a lot. The Chinese have a lot to lose in this. We actually import about four times more from China than they sell to us, than we sell to them. And so they have a whole lot more to lose in this discussion. So hopefully that will end up turning out to be better for us. But it's a scary moment right now, really.
In early trading today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 168 points, 24,538. It's about 2,000 points higher than it was a few weeks ago, but more than 2,000 points down from its high of a few months ago. How is the market responding to this? Would it be up and away if not for the tariffs?
I don't think so, and the reason I don't think so is I think the primary reason the stock market is slacking off a bit is because the Fed is starting to raise interest rates. Interest rates have been basically zero almost for several years now. And when the interest rates are real, real low like that, people have no other option except to put their money in the stock market. And so I think the stock market has been greatly overvalued. It has risen much, much faster than real gross domestic product has. And I think the primary reason for that is because, people there were no payment on CDs or any kind of bonds or anything else. So now what has happened is the Fed has been raising interest rates, and you're starting to see money flow out of the stock market and into CDs and bonds and things like that. And right now the Fed is planning to raise rates two more times, only 0.25% at a time, but still raising rates. And I think that, again, is going to put pressure on the stock market to be more weak and as people move money from the stock market into bonds and CDs and that sort of thing.
Do you invest in stocks, Dr. Scott?
Not a whole bunch. Now we're at the age where we're more interested in return of our investment than the return on our investment. We're really interested in that. What, to the extent that we do, we do not choose individual stocks. We invest in index funds. You probably saw that the guy that basically invented the index fund and ultimately set up Vanguard died this past week. And that was a really great thing for investors in the United States. And the idea behind his thinking was that you're really not smart enough. No one's really smart enough to pick the – well, a few people are very smart enough to pick, you know, specific stocks. So why don't you just invest in the stock market as a whole, which is what the index fund is. And to the extent that we do that, that's pretty much what we do.
We have a financial advisor, Andy Anderson, who's with us occasionally, and he says you should disregard dividends as a reason for buying a stock. Some people believe otherwise. What are your thoughts?
I don't have any thoughts on that. I mean, I'm not a financial advisor, so I'm a pro-saddle economist, and
Okay. You are still affiliated to some extent. I'm sorry. I say you're still affiliated to some extent, Dr. Scott, with ExxonMobil, correct?
The only thing, well, I say I'm affiliated with them, about every 2 years they ask me to do an update of the economic impact study of ExxonMobil. So to that extent, I mean, we do an impact, economic impact studies is one of the primary things we do, and we do them for, you know, 100 or so firms around the state, different ones. So we do one for ExxonMobil. They try to get it updated about every 2 years.
What's your take on this move by the school board right at midnight last night to deny ExxonMobil the industrial tax exemption that the company was seeking?
I think the governor's move to give this power to local governments and then the move to go to Baton Rouge to start taking these things away was probably the dumbest economic development move I've seen in this state in the 40 years I've lived here. It's just remarkably stupid. I can't believe he did this. But now we're reaping the whirlwind, and, you know, we have a great deal at stake here. There's a very, very large investment in the Exxon new, I guess it's the plastics plant, I think it is, that's on the hook here. And I'm going to be very surprised if Exxon goes forward with that now. They may. But I'm going to be very surprised. They're going to look at the business environment here and say, you've got to be kidding. We can go to Texas and get this and nothing flat. So, you know, why invest in the four major facilities we have here? I just think it's really, really, really bad economic policy.
All right. Retired General Russell Honore says, it's not that we don't like Exxon, but it's time they put their big boy pants on and run their business based on their profit.
I think that Russell Honore was a very honorable soldier, and he knows all about soldiering. I don't think he knows anything about economics. I mean, that's just not his training. It would be like me going out and making some statements about how we should conduct the war in Iraq or how you should manage the National Guard. Mr. General Honore is an honorable man and a good man in his field, but he's not a good. He is not an economist. He's not trained that way. The basic idea, the basic error, I think, that to go to Baton Rouge is making, is that they think that Exxon will make these investments anyway, and that flies in the face of decades of financial research that says precisely the opposite. The problem we got here, Jim, is that if this was the only place Exxon could invest, that would be okay. The problem is Texas. We're always competing with Texas for these kinds of monies, and especially for investments by Exxon, because they got a similar facility in the Beaumont area. And Texas has no corporate income tax, no personal income tax. They have a unified sales tax system. When it comes to ratings on higher education or K through 12, or infrastructure, and especially in the legal environment, they are much better rated than we are. And so we have to have something like the ITEP in order to compete effectively with Texas. And, you know, and And people who make these investment decisions have to look at what the rate of return on equity is here versus Texas. It's as simple as that. And if you take away this one kind of advantage we have over Texas, then I think they're going to start moving their money the other direction to the west.
Well, it's apparent you're in disagreement with the governor on this decision regarding tax exemptions, but you're also in disagreement with his call for a raise in the minimum wage. He thinks mm-hmm. we ought to go to $8.50, a very modest increase, by mm-hmm. the way, when you consider Arkansas is going to $11, and it's already at $9.25 in Arkansas. Why should we not have an increase in the minimum wage?
Well, I would point out that Arkansas's per capita income is well below ours. I think we're ranked about 37th, and they are ranked probably 47th or 46th or something like that. So mimicking economic policies in states that are worse off than us is not always a very good plan. I mean, I'm primarily against the minimum wage because the demand curve is downward sloping. That's one of the fundamental laws in economics. And if you raise the price of people, fewer people will get hired. And so I really think if you want to help the working poor or the people, you want to give people more income, give them more income, which we do through the earned income tax credit, you don't fiddle around with the wage rate. If you fiddle around with the wage rate, then you're going to end up causing people to get laid off. And I just think that's a really bad plan.
877-217-5757 is your number. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email address. Matt Doyle producing, and we have another segment, and we'll spend a few minutes of the next segment in a continuing conversation with Dr. Lauren Scott. Back after this time out with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with the esteemed economist Dr. Lauren Scott, born on January 25th, 1942, 8 days after Muhammad Ali. Mike in Sherwood. Mike, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes, I haven't been able to listen to all of your program today, so I may be repeating a question. Let me know if I have. Not only does Together Baton Rouge and the governor simply give some additional, veto power to localities with the tax breaks. But my understanding is threefold. One, Louisiana gives much more tax break than Texas does on a comparative basis. Two, one of the things that is a critique of the current of the prior system was that there was really no oversight practiced, that industries were submitting maintenance plans instead of new project plans, and that there was no one guarding the hen house to make sure that the promised number of jobs was actually met. And third, there were no clawback provisions so that if an industry did not fulfill their commitment on a tax break, they had to return the money.
All right, Dr. Scott, would you respond to Mike and Sherwood?
Sure, that's a lot to respond to. Whether or not we give more than Texas is something. I mean, I saw some reports out of Together Baton Rouge that they allege this. I would like to see where they got the numbers, and especially did that take into account the fact that in Texas there's no corporate income tax and there's no personal income tax and all the other taxes that exist here that do not exist there. The lower local sales tax collections and that sort of thing. That's the first thing. So it's not really clear to me that on the net that we are getting more. And if we are, why is it that the great majority of the investment money is going into Texas, not here? Especially for Exxon, it's going into Texas and not here. The second thing is on your point about the money, you're absolutely correct. In the past, you were able to get a tax exemption, even for something that was made, you had an environmental requirement that you had to put in place, or maybe it was something to maintain the existing facility. But remember, one of the things we're trying to do is not only get new jobs, but save the ones that we have. And again, ExxonMobil, for example, or Dow, or whoever, can either invest in maintaining and building up their plant here or maintaining and building up their plant in Texas. To me, the issue that you have to create jobs in order to get this is new jobs is really silly.
Right, Grady on Highland. Grady, you're on the air with Dr. Scott. Good morning, Grady.
Good morning, Jim. And Dr. Scott, I hate to tell you, I won't tell you how many years ago, but I had you in labor economics at LSU literally decades ago. And marginal product must always be exceeded by marginal revenue, just to remind you. And my question to you, though, is I have difficulty explaining to friends of mine why the trade agreement with Mexico does not equate to dollars to pay for the wall. And I find difficulty doing that in layman's terms. Could you help me with that?
I really can't. I mean, I don't see the connection between the two. I think we need a trade agreement with Mexico and we need a trade agreement with Canada because we're all better off when we have that. I haven't seen the argument, although I'm sure there's one out there, that that would be a way of financing the wall. So I'm sorry I can't help you with that. Jim, let me make one last comment about the last caller, and that's a clawback. There are clawbacks in place. IBM is learning that here in Baton Rouge, and other firms have learned this. When they did not generate the jobs that they said they would do in the previous under the ITIP agreements, they had to give money back, and that's exactly what IBM is having to struggle with. If they don't get to their 800 level here in employment in Baton Rouge, they're actually going to have to give back money to the state government. So there are clawbacks involved, and I think especially if you went back to the time when Stephen Moore was in place. I know that was a very strong point that he put in. And I know that Don Pearson now at the Department of Economic Development has that as well.
David in Atlanta. Hello, David. You're on Talk Louisiana with Dr. Lauren Scott.
Good morning, gentlemen. Dr. Scott, when President Clinton raised the minimum wage $1 an hour, we promptly had the lowest unemployment rate in 30 years. And now I know the federal government hasn't raised the minimum wage anytime recently. However, most states, the vast majority of states, have raised the minimum wage. Wages are rising. We have record unemployment in this country. I submit that raising the minimum wage has done far more to increasing wages and increasing or reducing unemployment than the Republican Trump tax cuts. And, you know, in Honduras, the banana pickers are paid about 50 cents a day, and the banana owner of the plantation makes millions. Would you support a minimum wage for the banana pickers in Honduras, and isn't that wage slavery?
Dr. Scott, would you respond to David?
I don't support a minimum wage any place. I mean, I don't know many economists that really do, unless they are employees of the union movement. I really don't know very many that do that. I really do not believe in increasing the minimum wage, and I certainly don't think that the wage that raising the minimum wage is going to reduce unemployment. That flies in the face of centuries of economic theory. And the demand curve is downward sloping. When you raise the price of anything, of the things remaining the same, the purchases of it go down, not up. So I mean that would be crazy. Now it may be that, well, I think wages are rising right now because the economy is going faster and the labor market is tight. And by the way, if the labor market is tight, there's even less of a need for an increase in minimum wage or mandated minimum wage, because the wage rate will go up anyway. That's what happens when you have a shortage of workers. One of the ways you solve that is by raising wage rates. Excuse me.
But does raising the minimum wage stimulate the economy, which in essence would cause more jobs?
Well, no. I think that's circular, because you say you raise the minimum wage for some, but you cause somebody. So you raise somebody's wage rate from 7 to 8 by a dollar, but you cause other people's earnings to go to zero because you've laid people off. I mean, the demand curve is downward sloping. The idea it'll stimulate the economy. You're ignoring the fact that you've laid people off, and suddenly their income goes to zero.
All right, but David is correct. The economy did grow during the Clinton years with an increase in the minimum wage, and We've had several increases, and the sky has not fallen. Charlotte in Iberia. Charlotte, good morning. You're on with Dr. Scott.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning to your guest. I think that your guest is making a false argument that the only elements that are considered are the wage or hourly wage workers. When a company is operating profitably, it is a reason. The reasons are labor productivity, the capital that was provided, and management bringing the two of those together and in good practices. So,
all right. Thank you, Charlotte. Dr. Scott?
I didn't hear a question, so I don't know what.
Well, she is of the mind that David opines that raising the minimum wage is a good thing, and you obviously believe it's a terrible thing. You believe in no minimum wage, do you? Don't you?
I really don't think that the government has any business setting prices of people. I really don't think they have any business doing that. And I think that we talk only about the good parts of it without talking about the bad parts of it. And the bad parts of it are the people that end up with nothing. For example, I mean, you and I have talked about this before, but if you go back to the 80s and look behind the counter at Burger King, the hamburgers were lit by people and buns were toasted by people. There were a lot of people employed in a Burger King. There are a lot of people employed in your Church's Fried Chicken. But suddenly you start raising the minimum wage, and now you look behind the counter, and machines are doing those things. And now you raise the minimum wage, and what you're now going to start seeing is you're going to start going up to a counter in Burger King, and there's going to be a kiosk there where you order your own food.
All right. Well, Dr. Scott, we do have to roll, but thank you as always. You're a good guest, and I appreciate your time.
So much that you substitute capital for labor.
Thank you, Dr. Scott. And a reminder that the New Orleans Saints play Sunday. We'll be talking about this. And if they win, they go to the Super Bowl. Have not won the Super Bowl in 9 years, and, of course, have only won it once, beating Indianapolis on February the 6th, 2010. But Drew Brees and company will be playing the Los Angeles Rams. The Saints are 3.5-point favorites in the Louisiana Superdome. Both teams 13-3. The Saints won earlier this year 45-35 over the Rams. And this is a rematch, in a way, of the first game ever played by the Saints as a franchise in the regular season, September 17th, 1967, Old Tulane Stadium. Saints beat the Los Angeles Rams, or lost to the Los Angeles Rams and George Allen 27-13, even though John Gilliam ran the opening kickoff back 94 yards for a touchdown. The Saints were defeated. Jimmy Taylor was on that team, the great LSU running back who played 9 years with the Green Bay Packers, Pro Football Hall of Famer, NFL Most Valuable Player in 1962. But playing with the Saints, he found the running tough. 390 yards in 1967 on 130 carries, just 3 yards a carry for Jimmy Taylor. But the Saints will go to the Super Bowl if they win this Sunday, and we'll be talking about it come Monday. Until then, for Matt Doyle, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening to Talk Louisiana, and stay tuned.